Bulimia sucks, but you don't, and here's why. The Bulimia Sucks podcast with Kate Hudson Hall will teach you how to begin breaking through the multitude of thoughts, feelings, triggers, and urges to empower yourself to change your painful behaviors completely. You will hear proven strategies and solutions to help you in your recovery, including real interviews with real people. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon. And now, another episode of Bulimia Sucks, the podcast.
Hello, my name is Kate Hudson Hall, and you are listening to Bulimia Sucks, because it does. This is a platform for people to share relatable and uplifting and inspiring conversations based on bulimia, anorexia, and other eating disorders, their victories and their challenges. And these are real stories from people who are suffering or have suffered an eating disorder. And episodes will include their personal stories of where they are now and their difficult journeys and their steps taken into recovering. And also we're going to be talking to professionals who work with people with an eating disorder. Now, our guest today is Joanna, and she has recovered from 19 years of bulimia and is very open about the subject and engages in projects and enjoys raising awareness. She's also been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which is an illness, if you don't know, that causes inflammation in the body. And she's also been suffering from endometriosis, which is a severe inflammation around women's cycle. For her, it was misdiagnosed for many years, but thankfully, she managed to reduce this inflammation dramatically and improving most of her symptoms, which has taken several years. And Joanna is a graduated teacher. She's a professional trainer. She's a hypnotherapy practitioner and a holistic pain management practitioner who's managed to ease her symptoms holistically, mostly following the principles of functional and traditional medicine and mindset training. So here is Joanna. So welcome, Joanna. It's fantastic to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Kate, for the invitation. To be honest, I was really pleased. Yeah, there are spaces out here for us to be able to voice our stories, to be able to give hope to those who actually lose their hope sometimes in the way. So I find it really encouraging for the young generation as well, the older who hasn't yet found their ways there.
Absolutely. So let's start off. So have you got a funny story for us now, Joanna?
I think one of the, you know, funniest stories come mostly from, you know, being with my partner, the person I have been with for the last, you know, six years. He's a person who has the ability to make me laugh, to make me laugh a lot.
That's good. We like that.
Yes. One thing with him, he has this ability. He's a very built up person. I met him when I was working years ago in a health food store, and we are like a gym people, right? So he's kind of like the person. And he told me the stories. Basically, every time he goes to weddings or something, I mean, he gets really excited. He's from Poland and he does this Polish dance. And every time he kind of like had accidents with his, you know, suits or something like that. So in 3 years ago, I think, obviously he was doing his dance. And well, yeah, he had an accident. Basically, the story is like everyday story. Then we go out with him. He has to break his trousers whilst he is dancing. Always, well, he rip up his pants. Yes, always, always, always. And I didn't believe it. Like, I'm telling you, because He's a good dancer, and he goes up and down. If you see Polish dancers in specific, you know, they are kind of weird. And he has a very, you know, big legs and strong glutes and all of that. So all of the time, he just basically he cannot get suits, or like every time he get a new suit or he goes out for a party or for like a wedding or whatever, he needs to get a new pair of at least the trousers. Those are the ones.
So you saw it for yourself that first time, did you? I bet you were.
I was like that day. Then I saw it first time. I asked you, like, where were you? It's like, well, you know, I told you, like, I did the dance. I ripped my pants, and I have to go and change. And that was a very funny time. To be honest, it was. Currently, we know our friends, a close circle friends that I have from that wedding. And it was an amazing time. But that for me is kind of like, you know, the funniest thing with him. So yeah, and I love, who doesn't like laughing? You know, it makes us happy down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just backtrack and tell us about when your bulimia began and that journey throughout that time when you
had to make it kind of like simplify it a bit. I mean, I don't believe it all started with bulimia or with anorexia. I think I always suffered from binge eating since I was a little kid. I was always with food. I think I mentioned before, I suffered from very bad digestion since I was a kid, which made me very, very anxious. And the anxiety was covered by just overeating. So obviously I keep putting on weight. And obviously I think that my bulimia kind of like began with a combination of having a very poor digestive system, along with the fact that I got a little bit, well, very criticized for being overweight when I was a kid. So that is how it developed. So I think at the age of around, I started getting overweight like since around 6, 7, 8 years old, which we develop our most, you know, beliefs and yeah, you know, that is grow up, and you know, our brain is kind of like developing at that age. And then when my grandpa died, we were very close. Then is when I start kind of like stop eating for a while. Like, you know, I have, you know, I got taller and I got slimmer. And I remember somebody making these, the girl that was tailoring the uniforms for school. I was, oh my God, you lost weight. You look great. And it's kind of like the first time I got kind of like a good compliment. And obviously after that, it was like, okay, so I am accepted by being, you know.
It's so interesting that you can remember that one phrase.
Yeah, yes, of course.
And it just goes to show us that power of suggestion.
Oh yeah, definitely. And obviously, I am only child as well. So, but I was compared constantly with cousins, and you know, I don't blame any of them. I mean, people don't know what can cause, you know, little things that you say to kids. They just really soak up all of that information. And
well, the children are like sponges, aren't they? They just absorb all of the
whatever. When he dies, when I start kind of like growing up, and then I start with like anorexia, I wouldn't eat for a while. I was getting, you know, really skinny. And then, you know, I found bulimia. I think it was a friend of mine who was doing it, and then I just copy it. And I think I was one of the only ones in that circle that, you know, like stick to with it long term. And that is how it developed, really.
Yeah. And then you had it for how long?
19 years, yeah. Roughly. Yeah. I mean, it's very hard to tell the exact time, but did it start it, you know, when you are like, I remember it was like around when I was 12 years old, something like that. But it took, you know, probably 19 years. I mean, at one point, I think the thing is, after bulimia, I developed orthorexia as well, because I became a personal trainer later. And for a while, I thought actually I was healed from my bulimia. And I think I was for a while. But then obviously, I didn't become obsessed anymore with the fact that I wanted to be skinny. Yeah. Now I become obsessed about that I want to be super fit and muscular, and I wanted to have this bodybuilding kind of, you know. So it passed from one to the other, which, I mean, it's not that bad, because obviously at that time I was obsessed with, well, it was still an obsession, which I don't think is great, but about, you know, training really hard, training sometimes even twice a day. And to be honest, you know, when you are in fitness, it's really hard to determine what is healthy from what is not. And I came to the conclusion that, because the thing is that many bodybuilders will work out 3 times per day, 2 times a day, sometimes when they are, you know, in prep period. And they will have, you know, time meals, and they will stop eating because, and it's okay, you know, it's okay for them. For me, what determines that you are facing an eating disorder is when your mind is having issues dealing with that, when you have emotional issues attached to the food. And that for me is when there is an eating disorder. Otherwise, it's not, because many people do fasting, intermittent fasting. That doesn't mean all of them have eating issues or eating disorders. It's just the way you associate yourself with food, the guilt that you put into that, the action of that. Then is when I realized that, right? So, yeah. And it was, you know, I was a PT, I was training people. And to be honest, I always gave great advice to my clients. I never said otherwise. Sometimes I will train too much myself. I end up overtraining too much. And I was stressed for the time. I mean, I passed through a divorce as well for a while. And the thing is that he was like my best friend. So to be honest, at the end, I lost the friendship that I have with that old relationship. But coming back to later when he developed orthorexia, because of all of those issues that were happening, like stress-wise, I had a relapse with bulimia, which was really, really bad. And then is when I realized, something is not right, you know. Then it was back in 2018, I will say, is when I started researching, you know, this mindset thing and going very deep into a mindfulness, neuro-linguistic programming and all of that.
Yeah. So just backtracking a moment, Joanna, so the first time before you got the orthorexia and it kind of like morphed into that, do you remember what helped you in that time to be able to sort of bring yourself back to consciousness and think, actually, I need to do something here. This has been going on for 19 years. What am I going to do?
Not after bulimia, but after the orthorexia developed and after I have the relapse, you mean? Like when I took the decision.
Well, yeah, either time. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, that was the last time. To be honest, things were very, you know, I have kind of like an easy think of like people were going too easy on me. My current partner actually was the opposite. He was actually really harsh in the sense. And I really appreciate it to this time, if I'm honest, because it made me take decisions and make me help me being more independent, you know, that I don't need to be an eating disorder. I mean, if I want to have a life in the future, per se, if I want to be a mom, sorry, if I want to have kids, if, you know, I realized that I didn't want to be like that. And to be honest, deep down as well, with bulimia, it comes a lot of self-conscious, you know, image issues. I started looking at myself in the mirror, man, I'm not getting any younger. I don't want to pass this to my kids when I have them, when I decide to have them.
Yeah.
And as well, it was fear. I have chosen a close friend of mine, but it was a person that I met. And she had bulimia when she was younger, and she passed away of throat cancer, very early. So all of that stuff, I cannot give that to the bulimia because she actually got better, but she was still drinking. I think she would smoke. I'm not really sure. But over time, she developed that, because for me, it's more like that accumulative stress over time. And so now the combination of all of that, being forced to, you know, taking accountability for what's happening to you. And apart from that, I wasn't getting any high out of my binges anymore. I was losing all of that loss, like all of that initial feeling of, you know, power, all of that was gone. And then is when I made the decision, cold turkey, to drop it. And since that time, it was the 27th of February, I never looked back. Then when it was that relapse that I had, that it was really bad.
So you made that decision. It was a realization that actually I'm not actually getting anything out of binging and purging.
Yeah.
And you made that decision that day right, I'm going to stop binging and purging today?
It wasn't easy because obviously I was really, really determined to not let my body to do the binges. It's not that magically, like you believe, okay, I will stop and it happens. Of course, it doesn't happen like that. So I have to pass through a lot of abstinence symptoms. It was absolutely horrible. It's kind of like a person being on drugs and not having the drug. That is how I felt. You know, I have a lot of panic attacks. I was dealing with severe anxiety. I was I wasn't giving in. So what
tools did you have? What did you do to be able to help yourself at that time?
If I'm honest, Kate, at that time, I just passed through it. I didn't, like, now I'm going to explain what I could have done to make the process easier, which I think it could have been.
Okay.
My case, I didn't know. I was just very determined. So the first thing was actually not giving in. That was the first thing. Second, I tried to do the approach that most therapy says when you are dealing with an eating disorder. So just eat whatever you want to eat and, you know, just go buy it and put on the weight. And, you know, I tried to go that road, but I was feeling so sick. I was feeling so, so sick. I couldn't eat anything. It was, you know, the stomach discomfort was really, really severe. And then is when I found, eating most meat, increasing the amount of protein in my diet mostly, that really helped kind of like regulated my hunger cues. And, you know, I want to leave clear that to these days, I'm not only just eat meat anymore. I actually try to have a most varied diet. I try to have a very paleolithic way, I would say. But I don't restrict any foods. If one day I fancy chocolate, I have it. If one day I fancy ice cream, I have it. The thing is that I already tricked my brain into not wanting those things anymore, and I don't crave them anymore. And then is when I realized that actually I'm recovering. But back then, dealing with do you know what? I rely a lot in meditation. So I look for meditation tapes in YouTube, how to deal with anxiety and abstinence and all of that. And I will listen to them whilst I have very, you know, panic moments when I feel like I wanted to binge a lot and something like that to retract.
So you were
myself.
Listening to meditation and practicing meditation.
Yes, so I did a lot of that. But it got me thinking. I got very curious of how the hell I managed to do myself things that therapists couldn't do in the past for me. And I was thinking, how did I do this? And then I came across, it's funny, like I didn't find the book, and because of the book I heal. The reading the book make me understand what had happened with me. And it's some of the books I want to share with people today.
Oh, yes.
First one, it was The Brain Over Binge by Katherine Hansen. Yes. I didn't finish it all, to be honest. I just read half of it. And basically, it just explains how the least power you give to your binge, the more power you have over your own brain to not engage into those feelings. So even if at the beginning, look, every change the humans are going to get into is going to be uncomfortable. People like to be in their comfort zones, and it's very hard for them to change. And when they understand that getting out of the comfort zone is uncomfortable, but by that doesn't mean it's going to be bad, it's actually going to make a better version of yourself, is what people need to pass a little bit through that discomfort for a while. That is the way I see it. And she explains. Yeah. The least you engage into that. It sounds easy. Like, you know, when you read it, it's like, okay, yeah, easy. Just stop doing it. But it goes further than that. It goes.
It's not as easy as that. Otherwise, exactly. People would have stopped before. We all would have stopped.
Exactly.
And
so,
the way. A long time.
Exactly. So, the way I see it is like when you stop, even the first time is going to be difficult, but, you know, just try to pass through it. Maybe again, listening to music, go and have baths, go to people, talk to people, get hugs, get affection from your partner if you have one. All of those things would help you. And you need to be honest with them. I had a few clients as well in the, you know, they haven't even opened themselves to their family or what is happening with them. And I think finding that support system is really important. If not, everything keeps very secretive.
And having that, even if it's only one person, but having that support, somebody that if you feel like it, you can open up to, somebody who's going to understand, actually, you know, I don't want to talk right now and understand that and hear what you're saying.
Exactly. And for me, I realized that because I was so determined to not engage into that anymore, and I passed through that discomfort, it started getting better, and I stopped feeling less desire to binge over time. It took time because, and unfortunately, I think during that time is when my fibromyalgia became really, really severe. Like, basically, if I'm honest with you, once I stopped my eating disorder, my physical symptoms became a lot more noticeable.
Right.
I really sick. My fibromyalgia was terrible. I was having severe muscle pain.
So you
pain.
Did have the fibromyalgia when you had the bulimia?
I think the fibro was always there, but to be honest, because I was a personal trainer back then and I was training so much, I thought the pains I had were related to my training, really. So I wasn't sure. But what happened is one thing I was reading about fibromyalgia is that it really, really developed when there is a big bit of stress going on in yes. your life. So in my case, I did have my personal stressors of, you know, I was stopping my eating disorder altogether. That's a stressful. I mean, when you engage.
That's a huge stress in itself, isn't it?
Exactly. So when you don't engage into a binge and you don't know what else to do, I don't smoke any weed. I don't like to take any chemical. So I did it like that. So that is very stressful. So my body got into this stressful mode all along. And again, I was passing through, you know, at that time, I was having a very bad job. Like, I was also in the fitness industry, but I was dealing with a lot of memberships and sort of sales. Mm-hmm. So basically, I had a very, very stressful job. So it was a lot of stress at the moment. I made a decision to change so many things at the same time, and that bring a lot of bad stuff. I was suffering from reflux, breathing issues, tachycardias, you know, but obviously, and I was very scared. So I decided as well to have a colonoscopy, a gastroscopy, all of that stuff, making sure I was really scared that I have damaged my body so much for the future that I did all of the tests and everything, thank God, came normal. But then is when it's okay, you got fibro. And, you know, from there, once I knew that I had that, I said, okay, this is not going to kill me. Obviously, I stopped training altogether. I start very, very with baby steps. And now I'm going back to train again. I'm doing the splits. I'm doing trying to do handstands. So basically, things I couldn't do before, I'm doing them now. But it took around three years, I think, of recovery altogether. And I'm still, you know, I still deal with allergies and the odd thing here and there. But, you know, being free from an eating disorder, which for me, again, is people ask me, how do you know that you are healed? How do you know that, you know, that's it? It's like, well, the day that I'm in front of a buffet and I don't feel like eating the whole of it, the day that I don't get worked up about going off a party or like a Christmas dinner and so anxious about, I don't know how I'm going to eat in front of these people. I don't have those feelings anymore. And then is when you know that you have liberated yourself from that thing.
Yeah. So, Joanna, what were the other books that helped you at that time?
Yeah. So another thing that I came to the realization as well with eating disorders and all of that is that I grew up with a very bad digestion, and I had a therapist long time ago that actually make me believe that because I couldn't go to the toilet, I have very bad constipation since I was a kid, since I was a baby. Actually, my mom used to do things for me. And he said, like, as my body couldn't release the stuff, you know, from the normal ways, myself found a better way to do it. And it was, you know, how I developed the bulimia that way. And then I came across this book. I started researching a lot about the gut microbiome, the gut and mind connection, which is so important. And it's when I found this book by Alana Cullen. The name is 10%
Human. 10%
Human. Okay. She speaks about how the body's microbiomes hold the key to health and happiness. So I'm a firm believer that most diseases start from the gut in the stomach. I believe that she actually mentioned something really, really interesting in the book. Two things were very interesting. The first one is, like, you know, if therapists will focus as well how the gut microbiome of the person is, how healthy they are, that could actually speed up the process of therapy in big things. And, you know, she made that remark in the book. And also she mentioned really interesting stories about a species, you know, when they're gut species, so like ants population. So basically she explains that, for example, you know, you see the ants working together. So you see that they go and, you know, they are very structured in their ways. And they were studying a colony of ants, but they realized that some of them actually were going a little bit crazy and they're actually going backwards, you know, climbing trees, and they were actually killing themselves.
Right.
And she was explaining in the book that when they studied this ants or something like that, they were studying the gut microbiome and it was disrupted in a way, causing mental disruptances, like you know. Sometimes that is why I'm saying, like, when I have very bad stomach, I don't feel well mentally. I feel depressed. I feel anxious. And that is why there is a big link. So I'm a big, big believer that when the person really directs how their gut microbiome is behaving, it can be the starting of a new way of health. Like in my case, I have to go to a very harsh elimination diets to try to, you know, clean my stomach from bad stuff. And I do believe that people should check their stomach as well when dealing with any kind of mental health issue, depression, anxiety. I mean, obviously therapy is really important. Talking therapy is super important, but check your stomach and check it. That might not be affecting as well.
It's really interesting that you that you're talking about this today, because yesterday I did a podcast with Laura Martin, and she suffered with IBS and anxiety, and she had hormonal imbalances and really bad skin issues, but she also had an eating disorder. And she went on to, even when she had the eating disorder, she set up a company called Healing to Happy and became a certified IBS nutrition consultant. And her company, Healing to Happy, it's an online holistic gut brain focused company that helps women suffering with IBS and anxiety to get back to eating normally without the food fear. But she talked a lot about the gut and the connection with the brain. And it's in episode 26. So anybody that's interested in learning more as well, from what Joanna said, also have a listen to episode 26, because she talks a lot about that and she teaches that and she helps people with that specific problem with her company.
I think that is incredibly important. I still believe, like, for example, in my case, I never, you know, it's very expensive, these services to check your gut microbiome. But in my case, an elimination diet kind of helped with it, because at the end of the day, you really don't know what might be affecting you. I did a test, like a hair mineral test, and I as well figured that I was deficient in so many. The thing is that people with fibro as well, and probably with eating disorders or many, many mental conditions, sometimes they don't realize they are deficient in certain things. Mm-hmm. So for example, in my case, I was deficient in bromelain. I was deficient in magnesium, like a lot. So once I start adding those things up, actually I kept improving and I kept improving. My digestion kept improving. Everything kept improving. So there is something to it. And I think there is not something. There is definitely a factor that I think everybody should take into consideration with dealing with mental issues, really mental disturbances, any kind of anxiety. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but I'm saying that if the person as well is suffering, like, you know, I when I was passing through that stress, half of my hair fell off, you know, it was terrible, very bad skin issues. I was bloated 24/7. You mentioned endometriosis. I haven't been diagnosed actually, but the symptoms definitely address that's actually going on, and I'm still on waiting list for that. But as you said, I put most of my stuff under remission with the stuff I did holistically, which, to be honest, I'm glad, because by the time I was trying to get the help from, sometimes people need to become very autonomous in their own healing. And this happens mostly when, you know, we have a pandemic and people are dealing with different stuff. You, if you really want to heal, you really need to get to investigate and research to how you can heal yourself. Otherwise, if people are not available, how are you going to do it? So I'm a big, big proponent of people becoming accountable for whatever is happening to them and try to read a lot, try and error a lot. And I think they're going to get answers. That is the way I got the answers myself.
Yeah. So Joanna, where are you now? And what are you doing with regards to your life now?
Okay. Well, I was going to tell you the last book quickly. There is just this book, and this is more about mindset. And one thing I'm a big proponent as well with people is about self-love, and mostly when it comes to eating disorders. There is no way that you're going to heal yourself without finding that space in your heart in which you can actually love who you are. That is really, really important. And I found this book. Actually, I didn't find it. A friend of mine, when we were at the gym, she recommended to me when I was having from fibromyalgia issues, and it's from Louise Hay. You can heal your life.
I think that's one of the first self-help books that I ever read, like, you know, in the 1980s, 90s or something.
I think it's, as old as it is, I think it's amazing. It's very big principles of hypnotherapy. And I think people, apart from that, you know, checking their stomach and, you know, doing this kind of, you know, diet search and all of that, it's really important to find that space in yourself in which you can love yourself. Otherwise, for me, it's not going to be successful if you cannot see the person in the mirror that it is in front of you and actually have good words towards it. I do that with my clients a lot. So now you're asking me where I am. So again, so I'm still working with my clients. I do my practice mostly online. I do work at the gym, but that is kind of like, you know,
as a personal trainer.
No, actually, I decided to not work as a personal trainer anymore in gyms per se, because I think there are enough personal trainers there for these kind of people who actually need just a specific that. I think, the kind of people I can help is these people that actually have issues with, you know, trying to get into, well, obviously have food issues, or they're suffering with pain, or have issues kind of like sticking to diet. We do a lot of mindset work. And part of that mindset work as well that I do with them every day is actually, you know, we work a lot in the way they look at themselves in the mirror. And we do exercises with them in which they don't realize that I think 80% of their day is criticizing themselves, not just their body image, but everything. Oh, I'm so dumb. I'm so stupid. So people don't realize the power of the thought and the power of the spoken word when you say things about yourself.
We have 60,000 different thoughts that go through our mind every day. And 95% of those thoughts are the same thoughts that we had yesterday. So all of those negative thoughts we had yesterday, we're going to be repeating them today. It's mad.
Exactly. And the what I said to my clients, you know, how is the way you learn when you were a kid? You learn through repetition. So we need to focus a lot right now on the repetition, on the positive things, on the positive affirmation of your persona. They don't realize that they're all the time saying, oh my God, my ties are too big. My, you know, my hair is still like this. My eyes are like that, or I'm not enough with this. You know, I cannot control that. So we focus on recognizing those thought patterns and trying to change it into positive ones, to lots of repetition. It's easy task from, like, they're simple, but they are not easy. That's what I mean.
So how do people find you?
Basically, I'm coaching people. Mostly I'm on Instagram. I have two Instagrams. One is educational and the other one is kind of like my coaching Instagram. So I coach people.
What's the address?
So the Fit Minds Rock Coaching, that's mine.
Fit Minds Rock Coaching.
Holistic pain management or mindset coaching, you know, issues with food, kind of like, you know, and it's towards mostly this kind of stuff that we are doing. It's pretty much coaching. And the other one is just FeedMind Rocks, which I have kind of like an educational platform, but mental and physical fitness info.
Okay, so we'll put all the links below. And the book that we were talking about is You Can Heal Your Life, that last book by Louise L. Hay. So if anybody was looking for it, I think Joanne and I would recommend that everybody has a read of that one.
Definitely, definitely.
And that one.
My recommendation to people, be kind to yourselves, be grateful of where you are every single day, that is definitely going to start changing your life from now. Gratefulness and love are the most important things, I would say, to start your journey.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Joanna.
My pleasure. Thank you for the
invitation. It's wonderful to have you on and to hear your journey and how you help people now. So like I said, we'll put all the links below so people can come and find you. Okay, so that's all for today's episode of Bulimia Sucks. So thank you for listening to Joanna and I. And join us again on the next episode of Bulimia Sucks. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple iTunes so you never miss an episode. And if you haven't already heard about it, check out my book, Bulimia Sucks, on Amazon. And also the food journal, Bulimia Sucks Food Journal, will be coming out in the next week or two, which will be on Amazon, which will be a great help for you to be able to keep track of what foods you're eating. It's a 3-month journal. And thanks for listening then. And before we go, share some love for your favorite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. So thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.
Bulimia Sucks, but you don't. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon.